from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Dan Rothstein and Liz Santana think students aren't asking enough questions in today's classrooms. They believe students need to learn how to ask the right questions, and in doing so, they'll better understand the math problem or historical period they're studying. So what are the right questions? We invite educators, parents, and students to join the discussion. Then at 10:30, when author Sandra Cisneros' character Marie in her new novel loses her mother, she says she felt alone like a glove left behind at the bus station. That loneliness is central to Cisneros' latest book, Have You Seen Marie? A colorful fable about the search for a lost cat, illustrated by Esther Hernandez. The author of The House on Mango Street joins us in the upcoming segment after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this hour of the Forum program. Dan Rothstein and Luz Santana, co-directors of the Right Question Institute, join us in studio for this opening Forum half hour. They ask the central question in their book and in their work, Make Just One Change is the name of the book, and the question is, what would classrooms look like if teachers asked fewer questions and students asked more? In this Forum segment, we focus in on turning the Socratic method of teaching upside down by teaching students to ask their own questions. And Dan Rothstein, Liz Santana, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Well, where to begin with this? I guess the place to begin would be what comes out of, or what the outcome is, the results of having students ask their questions rather than the teacher saying, okay, this is a question and you find the answer, or let's explore the question from my point of view. They tend to follow their own curiosity more and maybe become more inquisitive, more critical thinkers. Real learning is part of it?
I think so. I think that we see consistently, we hear from teachers and students, there are three outcomes. One is that students are more engaged. And I think that we've all had that experience when we've asked our own questions, we're more attentive, we're more engaged, we're more thoughtful, we're thinking about what we want to learn, and we listen differently to what we hear after we've asked our own question. So they're more engaged. Second, they take more ownership, which for teachers, this is a huge thing. They see every day in front of them, they talk about how when I try to engage the students as if I'm trying to pull teeth. But when they're asking their own questions, they're taking ownership for their learning. They're really following their own line of inquiry. They want to know more about what we're studying. And the third outcome is they learn more. We see better quality work. We see more writing. We see more in-depth learning in math and science. We see better design of science projects, of research projects. So basically, those are the three outcomes. Students are more engaged. They take more ownership of their learning, and they learn more.
But doesn't it follow, perhaps, Luz Santana, when you make the students more autonomous in this way, you also take away from the teacher's role and the teacher's traditional responsibility?
Not really, because it is a different way of teaching. And what happens is that the teacher plays a different role. Rather than what they do is that they lead students into thinking. The process of teaching students how to ask their own questions allows the teacher to still communicate what they need to communicate regarding curriculum roles, but the difference is that the students are thinking and doing more rather than the teacher.
So the teacher is not just a facilitator trying to be a catalyst. The teacher is also still playing an instrumental role in this learning process?
Yes, they do, because, for example, they are the ones who figure out how to introduce the students, how to ask their own questions, and it comes out of the content that they have to teach in the classroom.
And Dan Rothstein, this began in an immigrant community in Boston, as I understand it. Now you're in Palo Alto and also in Roxbury in Boston.
Yeah. Right. It's actually now being used all over the world. We started off 20 years ago. We were working on a dropout prevention program, Luz and I and several others. And parents were telling us, we don't know what questions to ask. So we were very smart. Only took us 1,000 or 2,000 times of hearing that. And we realized, oh, they're naming a problem that we haven't paid attention to. So we went out, did the wrong thing, gave them a list of questions that only created more dependency. So in a sense, they named a problem that had not received a lot of attention, which is, what does it mean? How important is it for you to be able to ask your own questions, to participate in any level of your life in democracy? And so we basically started off looking at how do you teach what really turns out to be a very sophisticated skill of question formulation to people with limited literacy, limited income, limited education. And they taught us a lot about how to do it. We made a lot of mistakes along the way. But eventually, we figured out a very simple process that allows them to very quickly acquire the skill.
Well, it certainly works in many respects with, say, literature. I noticed, for example, in your book, you talk about Julia Alvarez's book, In the Time of the Butterflies, and the question comes down to, can you justify torture? And that leads to more questions and really gets students thinking critically. But what about things, Luis Santana, like engineering or mathematics? Wouldn't seem, at least on the face of it, to work as well.
It works across subject areas, grade levels, and issues. And teachers have used the process for teaching students how to formulate questions to teach them about fractions, to teach them about mathematic equations. So, for example, in a classroom, a teacher used a formula with the quadratic equation for students to ask questions, and they generated questions, they prioritized questions, and then they had research projects to answer the questions that they produced.
They often begin with three questions, isn't that?
Winds up with three questions. Yeah. That they go through a process where they produce questions, they're doing divergent thinking. Then they begin to look at the difference between open and closed-ended questions. They begin to do convergent thinking. And then they conclude with prioritizing their questions. So we had one teacher who said, students are accustomed in my math class to basically me giving them a problem and they have to solve it. And then that's the end of the game. What I've tried to do is to teach them that mathematicians take an answer and turn that into the next question. So for mathematics teachers, they've been incredibly excited about how they get students to start thinking as mathematicians by asking their own questions.
Makes students less apathetic? Stirs them more? I mean, to come up with questions on their own?
Well, students welcome the opportunity that they get to generate their own questions because the question formulation technique process allows them to work in groups. It is a process that is participatory. They learn from each other. They support each other when they are producing the questions.
And in fact, the model is really a model that here, if you think about in Silicon Valley, in this area where there's a lot of innovation, entrepreneurship, high-tech companies, software design, those companies will say, what we want is we want people who work here who are not waiting to be told what to do, but can actually figure things out for themselves, can take the next step, can ask better questions. And so we've had high-tech executives come to us and ask us to work with them to look at how do we create a more effective question-asking culture in our organizations.
Well, you mentioned culture. Actually, you feel that this notion of enhancing question-asking and making students more inquisitive and maybe even transforming them in some ways to be more inclined to ask questions can be used in the democratic process, can be used with citizenship and voting and all that. And Luis Santana?
It is used in those areas, and the important thing is for people to be able to think on their own, to be able to think about the issues, to set their own agenda, to make the connection between their own lives and voting. So therefore, they should think on their own about what is it that they need to know about the people who will be making decisions for them, and then how that will be having an impact on their lives.
We're talking with Luis Santana and Dan Rossian, and they are co-directors of the Right Question Institute and co-authors of Make Just One Change, Teaching Students to Ask Their Own Questions. What do you think about this? I'm putting this out to listeners now. I mean, this idea of students learning largely by asking questions and really leading and directing students to ask more questions when they're studying just about virtually any kind of content and approaching, pedagogically, from an educational standpoint, learning that way. Let me open the phone lines. There are many of you who may want to weigh in on this, teachers, students, parents. Let me know what you think. And also, even the broader question of how this might be applied to helping democracy and just the whole citizenship process. Our toll-free number is available to you now. It's 866-733-6786. If you have questions or comments for our guests, Dan Rothstein and Liz Santana, or if you want to weigh in here with your own opinion, feel free to call us now. This is a half-hour segment, so indeed you may want to call us at this moment. It's 866-733-6786 for your calls. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment you might have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum, click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page. And neither of you actually come to this as educators. You're not classroom teachers, right?
I'm not. And for example, I'm an immigrant from the Caribbean, and I came here a little more than 20 years ago. And when I came, I was not participating in anything. I could not speak the language, and my social worker.
Su inglés es muy bien ahora.
Thank you. My social worker did something very interesting, and it was that he invested in me. He made sure that I was learning things that I could help myself, and
getting you to ask questions.
Well, he taught me other things, but what I learned from him, I have applied that, and we have applied that to the work that we do today. So that was a good learning experience that I had from him, but it was more about investing in my capacity to help myself. And what we have seen over the years, it is that it is very important for people to develop skills, foundational skills that they can use everywhere. And learning to ask your own questions is a foundational skill that you can use in education, that you can use in healthcare when you are seeing your doctor, when you are problem solving for yourself, when you are looking for jobs. And one of the things that we have also learned over the years, it is that there are places where a lot of decisions are being made that affect people. And in those places, they can use what we call the foundational skills. And asking your own questions is one of them. Knowing how to focus on decisions is another foundational skill. That is something that can change your life, that it can change how you interact with programs, services, and institutions.
Now, do you know why a psychiatrist always answers a question with another question? Why shouldn't a psychiatrist answer a question with another question? Let me go to our callers here. Dan Rothstein, your background is not in teaching either, though.
No, it's in education. I definitely have studied
policy
education.
And
no,
yeah.
It's actually why
theory.
I did a doctorate in education, but it was in non-formal adult education primarily. And we've been working with we started off by working with adult education, adult literacy programs, and that's where the ideas, many of them, came from.
Could you walk us through maybe just quickly a specific example of how this would work? I mentioned the Julie Alvarez novel, but maybe one
right.
That you've observed in the classroom.
Do you want a classroom? I'll give
sure.
You, actually, it's interesting. This is a good classroom example and a good outside the classroom example. Is a high school science teacher in an urban high school in Boston wanted to teach students about the environment. And there's many different ways that she was thinking about it. What she came up with was she had them look at a question focus, what we call question focus, the focus for their questions, that pollution affects Boston citizens. So she had them produce their own questions, we have rules for producing questions that allows them to come up with their own questions, many of whom have never really sat down and generated questions before. So they started to ask questions about, does it affect all Boston citizens? How does it affect? How do we know? How is it measured? What can we do about it? So they covered very quickly a wide range of issues. And then she had them narrow it down, look at the differences between their open and closed-ended questions. So when they said, is there anything we can do about it, they changed that to, what can we do about it? And then they prioritized their questions. And out of that, they were able to design specific research projects on how they did it. And not an example outside of the classroom is we worked with the medical school of the City College of New York, where we taught fourth-year medical students to go into community health centers in the Bronx and Bedford-Stuyvesant in New York City and teach patients in 10 minutes how to focus effectively and ask questions. And what patients said were, they said, I didn't know decisions were made here. I didn't know I could ask questions. I didn't know how to ask questions. So if you think about that on a huge scale over and over and over again, that people are walking into a wide range of institutions and are not expecting to participate in decisions, you have in some ways the source of a lot of problems that we have in our democracy of people not participating in decisions.
All right, let me bring our listeners in here, and we begin with a caller from Oakland. Mason, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been a teacher for 7 years in Oakland, and what's being brought up here, I think, is really, really great, and I'm really happy to hear it on the radio. One concern, though, that I've run into, and that my cohort of teachers in Oakland have run into, is that in low-income schools, in Title I schools, where we have 90% or more of our population, that receive, free and reduced lunch and things like that as a result of the income of their families, a lot of them lack a lot of prior experiences and background knowledge that's really helped fuel these sort of questions. And so we found that although we wanted to tailor our subject areas and kind of the pedagogy to follow this model, it was really difficult to extract questions and kind of get the students to be very inquisitive, because they lack some of those experiences that their middle-class counterparts would normally have. And so I just wanted to kind of bring that up as one of the challenges that I think teachers run into, especially in low-income schools.
I assume, Dan and Luz, this is a challenge. I mean, I think that's stated pretty well.
It is a challenge, and we understand the challenge and understand that it might be difficult to get the students to be critical thinkers, to ask questions. But what we have developed is a methodology that allows teachers to easily build those kinds of skills. And in order to learn how to ask questions, the students will not need prior knowledge, because the process can be used for different purposes. And one can be to identify prior knowledge, but also to help students learn more deeply and to see what students know and so on. But one example that we have is from a summer school program in Boston, a ninth grade remedial program, where students were failed during the year, and the teacher began to use the question formulation technique to help the students to learn how to ask their own questions. And in fact, she was testing on whether it will work with her students. And it did. It was just amazing, where students were at the beginning feeling that they didn't know what questions to ask, to using the process, being able to help themselves in small groups, able to produce the questions, and then having a sense that they were learning more, having a sense that they were getting good at this thing of asking questions. But the important thing was that she took a risk, and she gave them the opportunity. She turned the thinking into them. She trusted that they were able to do it.
At the end, they said they felt smart, which is not something that they had ever used to describe themselves in school before.
Let's bring some more listeners into the discussion here. Antonia, good morning.
Hi, good morning. So my question is, I teach sexual health, and I've sort of been incorporating parts of what you guys have been doing into how I teach it, in terms of playing games like 20 questions and really trying to help my students ask those questions that I think are so important, especially in sexual health. But in terms of like a facilitator, what are some qualities that you found were really essential for this to be effective?
As a facilitator, you said?
Yeah, for the facilitator. Like, what are some things that the facilitator needs to have in order for these programs to succeed?
Well, I think that is very simple. You need a question focus or a focus for your questions that will allow your participants or students to think divergently. And then it is about turning the thinking into them. And in fact, you are a facilitator. You don't lead with the questions, but you provide the students a process so they will ask their own questions. And the way that we have some rules in the process, and the first rule, ask as many questions as you can, allows, gives license to ask the questions.
Yeah, but I'm looking at a listener here who raises maybe a central question. You can keep asking questions, but how do you know what the right question? What's the right question?
Right. There is a process, and it's very interesting how people come to it. Is that I think that we all have had this experience where we've walked out of something and said, oh, I didn't know what to ask, or I asked the wrong question. So part of this is about being strategic in your questioning. The New York Times interviewed college presidents a few years ago and asked them, what should a student learn from 4 years of college? And Leon Botstein of Bard College said, well, the best that we can do is there's so much knowledge and information to teach them how to ask strategic questions. And so we're saying that instead of waiting for students to go through 4 years of college and a couple $100,000, we can actually begin to teach this earlier. And we're seeing examples of teachers in the elementary grades using it all the way through high school and now into higher education.
Let me read some remarks from listeners. Spencer says, one of the best courses I took in college was in anthropology, where the exams consisted of given scenarios and the task was to pose relevant questions. Mm-hmm. I'd never before thought so deeply mm-hmm. during a test. It was an amazing technique. Nice. I found since in the workplace, framing questions is more often the relevant skill than coming up with the answers. After all, nowadays, if you needed direct answer, go to Google. Right. Here's Wendy from our website who writes, as a high school English teacher, I had my best success when I taught the class Socratic dialogue and discussing literature. It was hard at first for them to learn that the best question was an authentic one, one they really wanted to understand and one that wouldn't have a yes-no answer. But after teaching that, the rest of the term yielded much better discussion and they became my best disparagers of easy questions. The test of a good question was which one yielded the most discussion. And Tony writes, these folks want to tell me how to teach, but neither is a teacher. Early in my career, I used the Socratic method for a few years. Here's the problem. Economics has actual content. It's impossible to cover the material in a Q&A format. Trust me, I tried. Since your guests have never faced the time pressure of actually teaching, they're in no position to advise any of us in the trenches. And you say what to that?
I think it's quite legitimate concern on his part. All that we can say is that everything that we have learned from the people with whom we've worked, and we have seen teachers use this. It's teachers and students who are talking about how powerful this is. I have a daughter who's a high school teacher in Brooklyn who has used this from beginning from her first year of teaching.
What's her subject?
Her subject is history. Is that she has seen students who might have low skill levels do very high-level thinking by learning to ask their own questions. We have in Texas, a woman who is a coach for the Gates Literacy Initiative took our strategy into a middle school where all the students were low-income students, immigrant students, and the teacher said, I don't think this can work with our students. He tried it out, and he came back to this coach afterwards, and he said, you know what? We've been underestimating how well our kids can think. That's what this is about.
Well, we're at the point where we have to bid you adieu, but it was fascinating having you on here. Dan Rothstein, Liz Santana, co-directors of the Right Question Institute and co-authors of Make Just One Change, Teaching Students to Ask Their Own Questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And another segment of Forums up ahead, famed Mexican-American author, Sandra Cisneros will be with us in the next segment. So stay tuned. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasnick.